Excuse me, Faisal Shah is now joining the call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me, the recordings have now started.
Okay, thank you very much. As usual, why don't we begin with our roll call?
Absolutely, I'll do that. Greg, would you like me to do it, excuse me?
Oh, yes, thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Greg Aaron, Roland Perry, Mike O'Connor, Martin Sutton, George Kirikos, James Bladell, Rob Hutchinson, Faisal Shah, and from staff we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, and Glenn de Saint-Géry, and myself.
Excuse me, Greg Ogarek is now joining the call.
Thank you, sorry. And Greg Ogarek has just joined. And apologies, we have Phil Corwin, Jeff Newman, and Frederick Fellman. If I could also just remind all parties, please to state their name when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you.
Thank you for that. This is Greg. On our agenda for today, we have a 90-minute meeting. We're going to run through cyber squatting, uniformity, and contracts, assuming Barry Cobb can join us. I'm hoping so. We'll then move on to spam, phishing, and malware. And then we'll talk at the end of the meeting about our meeting schedule for the next couple of months, including at Seoul. Does anyone have any additional items that should be on the agenda? Okay. Hearing none, why don't we pick up our discussion of the cyber squatting conversation we had in the last meeting 2 weeks ago, in which we kind of discussed a reformulation of how to proceed on this topic. If I could, I'd like to turn that over to James.
Hi, Greg. I was afraid you would do that.
Sorry.
Looks like Marika has her hand up. I'll let her speak first before I offer apologies. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just wanted to point out that the email that's up in Adobe Connect is an email that George circulated, I think, just following our last meeting. I think trying to get some discussion going on the list on this issue as we discussed in the last meeting, but I didn't see any feedback or responses to this, and actually wanted to ask George if anyone maybe responded directly to you or whether there was really just complete silence in the last 2 weeks on this issue.
George here. Sadly, it was the latter, complete silence.
Okay. I also see that Rod Rasmussen has joined the call. My recollection from 2 weeks ago, and my recollection is a little fuzzy, and I started listening to the MP3 to go back through it. I'm sorry, I was in Germany with lousy connectivity. But one of the things we discussed was how the definition of cyber squatting was needed work because some people were not comfortable taking it farther afield than the definition provided in the UDRP. There was also some discussion of whether we were really talking about making suggestions for changes or refinements to UDRP. So, James, what's the high-level overview from, coming out of last week's meeting?
I think last week's meeting, this is James speaking, last week's meeting I was very encouraged by the discussion after, I think, a couple of weeks of this issue being somewhat of a non-starter within the breakout group. There seemed to be a lot of interest on the call in reformulating that, perhaps with some new membership. And that's from my perspective, Greg, that's where it stands today. There hasn't been a lot of movement on that besides the post that George has made.
Okay. In George's post, talks about ACPA. So this is further definitional work, George?
Right, because what happened was that George here. What happened was that people added terms to the UDRP in the draft definition, which tilt the balance towards people that are complaining. But they didn't include language that counterbalances that, which was already in the ACPA. So I drew attention to that language in my email, and also, you know, other counterbalancing arguments in the. I limited it to four points below that people that are registrants would want protection from if people were going to start redrafting the UDRP.
Thank you. By the way, I see that Michael Young has joined, and James has his hand raised.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. And George, thanks for putting that together. I had just a couple of quick questions, and one is, you know, directed at George. At the, do you feel that that the definitions or the language of the ACPA was can be balanced with other language that was not selected from the ACPA? Is that a synopsis of what you're saying?
George here. Yes, like that section 1125D1BII. Said, in particular, bad faith intent described under subparagraph A shall not be found in any case in which the court determines that the person believed and had reasonable grounds to believe that the use of the domain name was a fair use or otherwise lawful. That's a big, you know, statement that allows registrants to counter the bad faith arguments. And basically what happened in the draft was that a whole bunch of, you know, additions were made to what constitutes bad faith. But this counterbalancing point, you know, the reasonable beliefs and so on, wasn't added.
Okay. And then the second part was just kind of a thought to Greg. I mean, I think that, you know, so I'm a little confused. You know, sometimes this topic generates a lot of traffic in the calls and on the list, and then sometimes, you know, it's just, you know, we ask questions and it's crickets. So, one thought might be to essentially put out a last call for a definition, and George and I can work on that. You know, I'm available actually this afternoon, and anyone who wants to join. And then, you know, just really driving towards putting this to bed, putting out a last call for that, and then moving forward with the qualifier that if the definition in the UDRP needs to be revisited, that could be a follow-on recommendation out of this group, but it doesn't have to be done on the table by this breakout group. And I think that might save a lot of the quagmires that we continuously wade in on this topic. So just an opinion or thought or recommendation at this point.
Okay. So James has asked for basically a last call. Any thoughts or problems with that? I think we should move ahead on it. My suggestion, James, would be to have a last call that lasts about 10 days so people can put notes up on the list, and we close the deadline before the next call so we could move ahead then. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, that gives... myself and George and anyone else who's interested, a couple of days to put together the language of that last call definition. And then, you know, I think we need to make it clear, however, that if we want to start peeling back layers of the UDRP definition, that should probably be bundled up into a recommendation as opposed to doing that within this group. So it'll be a recommendation for future groups.
Correct. I see Mikey's hand.
Hi, gang. This is Mikey. I can't really remember where we were at the end of the last call either, but my recollection was sort of that folks were leaning towards just sticking with the UDRP. Is that what we're asking the last call on?
Mikey, this is James, and I see George already has his hand up, but I'll just jump in and say, yeah, that's kind of what we're driving towards. I'll let George, he wants to build on that.
George here, yeah, that's what my hope would be, because they spent there was a very large group that formed the ERP 10 years ago, and if we're going to reform it, I don't think that's what we should be focusing on. We should be focusing on all the different kinds of abuses, and if we're going to spend months redoing the UDRP in secret, I think people would want to know it should be something left to future work.
And this is Greg, and where I was a lot of these definitional issues bring up the question, does the UDRP need revisiting or tweaking? Because it is, as a lot of people have noted, it's been around for a while. So for me, it was not so much should we try to come up with new definitions, as the discussion of the definitions points up the fact that there's been a lot of evolution of need and of thinking over the years. And a recommendation would be that maybe UDRP needs some work in at least a few different areas. And that could lead to a recommendation that the GNSO look at that. That's where I was.
Right. And I think that, if the UDRP is set to be materially reformed, sorry, this is James, that question needs to go to council and they can discuss it as well. We shouldn't be backed into that type of an operation.
This is Mikey again. I think the slippery slope is from definition to recommending reform. And to put it bluntly, I think that part of the reason we got into this quagmire is partly because Rodenbaugh sort of dramatically expanded the definition with his first draft, and a lot of us have been sort of fighting that one back into the bottle. And we might just want to fight it back into the bottle and leave it at that.
Well, this is Greg. If people want to propose, if you want to propose that the UDRP be looked at by the council, then there need to be good reasons for that. There have to be reasons behind the recommendation, right? If there are good reasons, I'd love to have them enumerated.
Yeah, I just don't know that that's in our scope.
I think it's probably in scope.
Well, I'm happy to pursue it. I want to make sure that we're not sort of begging trouble here.
I'm just saying if somebody thinks the UDRP is worth being looked at by the council, we need to have an enumeration of the reasons why it is currently insufficient or needs some tweaking. That's all.
And Greg, this is James. What I said that is essentially is that we shouldn't be looking to tack on UDP reform as an afterthought to an existing CDP. If what I meant was getting in front of the council, meaning that it should go through the formal PDP process on in its own right. I'm sorry.
Our group is here to recommend PDPs where we think that they would be called for.
Right.
So
and I'm not advocating. I'm not advocating UDP reform in one way or another at this point. I just think that if that is going to be one of the recommendations, it should go through that whole vetting process with an issues report and definition of harm. Yep.
Exactly. Okay. All right, so we're all agreed on that. One of the things we'll do then is we'll put out this last call for a definition and get that wrapped up. I'm also going to put out a separate note to the group based upon this conversation and say, if you're interested in UDRP, state the reasons why you think it would need that, a look by the council. And if they're good reasons, then we can discuss those. And if nobody comes forward with any good reasons, then we say we examined it and we move on. So does that sound okay?
Yep.
Mikey, that's okay with me.
All right, good. So, James, anything else we need to address today on the cyber squatting issue?
No, I think, George, if you and I can connect after this, I prefer today, but if that doesn't fit your schedule, then we can coordinate on email.
George, sure, that's fine.
Okay.
All right, thanks, guys. So we'll leave cyber squatting. Second is uniformity in contracts, and we got a document posted up by Barry Cobb, but Barry is not with us right now. We do have some other members of that subgroup on the call, though, specifically Mikey. O'Connor, also
and,
James.
Yeah, and James.
Yeah. Rodenbaugh and Newman are not with us today. Newman, I think, sent his regrets. All right. So if you haven't seen it already, this document was also posted up to the working group list with a couple of attachments. And let me see a show of hands of the people who have taken a look at that document. Okay, Mikey, myself, James, George. Anybody else? Okay. All right. Mikey and James, would you be able to tell the group about this document and walk us through it? I wish Barry was here, but I'd hate to lose the another 2 weeks. So would you mind walking us through it?
Sure. This is Mikey. I'll do this one. James is doing triple duty otherwise. So the one that's on the screen now is a great document to just walk through. I assume that we each have the ability to move through it on our own.
Torture, so, you can drag the right hand.
Yeah. So I'm going to sort of take you through page by page and count on the rest of you to move the document as you go. This is Barry's work. I mean, I think James would agree with me that Barry did all the work on this, and we just cheered him on. So this document, which just blew me away when he produced it, is something that we feel very comfortable with, but all credit has to go to Barry for producing it. The first page is the charter that we were given, and I think it's the sense of the group that we're not done, but we are at a point where we wanted to come back to the larger group and give you an update on what we found and get your reactions on where we should go next. But basically, he's highlighted the charter there. I won't read through it. It's just there for you to refer back to. The next page, the research page, is a description of what we did, and again, I'm using the term we loosely. Barry did all the work here. He's describing really three things. The first was that he, I think for personal reasons, partly to bring himself up to speed, was interested in doing this research for all kinds of reasons, including ours. And so he went ahead and hold a group of basically publicly available documents on mostly registrar websites, although I think he did also looked at some registry websites. And his goal there and our goal there was to sort of take a snapshot of where we are at today to determine the answer to the question, is there uniformity in contracts, before we go on to the next chunk of work, which is, if there is not uniformity in contracts, what should we do about it? And so this is sort of setting up that research that he did. The next page is really kind of a guide on how to read these charts that are in the Excel spreadsheet that he sent. And this bird's eye view of one of the pages of the chart is a pretty good representation of the conclusion that we came to, which is there is not uniformity amongst contracts, but there are some patterns to be noted. And just staying at this top level, if you look in the upper left corner, what you see is that the green, the dark green, indicates that Barry found language relating to an issue which ran down the left side. The left side of the spreadsheet is basically the issues that we are working on in this subgroup. And then the columns across the top are registrars that he looked at, and we've scrubbed the identities of those registrars pretty aggressively. We really don't want this to become a registrar comparison or anything like that. We are really interested in the answer to our narrowly defined question, is there uniformity of contracts or not? And so requests to reveal the names of the registrars behind the labels will be greeted with some grouchiness by the subcommittee, because we're pretty agreed that we did not want to identify specific registrars. But what you start to see is the pattern.
Quick question on that, Mikey?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. I can't raise my hand. I'm not online. Would it be possible to get some classifications for those, as in U.S.-based, not U.S.-based, or large versus small, or retail versus commercial, without naming names, not getting so specific that you know who they are? But in other words, to give an idea of who's got what kind of contracts for what kind of customer base.
Yes, and I think, although I have to look at the last version of the spreadsheet, I think some of those classifications are in the spreadsheet. And so what I would commend everybody to do is really dig into the spreadsheet rather than this summary.
Okay, thanks.
I think you'll find some of the classifications you rattled off, Rod, but not all of them. And we may want to have a conversation about whether to expand that and also give the subgroup an opportunity to explain why some of the classifications were dropped. We really didn't want to get to a point where by having enough classifications in there, you could figure out which registrar we were talking about. So we had a pretty deep conversation about that. And I don't think that we're opposed to classifications, but we are pretty opposed to the idea of being able to suss out a specific registrar from this.
Okay. This is Greg. I have a question, Mikey.
Yeah, go ahead.
In the left-hand column, there are Tier 1 and Tier 2. Can you explain what those mean?
Yeah, let me explain that a little bit. I should just say Barry. Wherever I say we, just say mentally say Barry in your mind. Barry looked at registrars by size. He basically looked at them by number of domains under registration by that registrar, I think. James, correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Correct, and I'm trying to find the source that he used, and I think it was it wasn't registrar stats, but it was like web host info or something like that.
Yeah, and I think he might have that embedded in this document. If not, we can certainly find it. Anyway, it's one of the publicly available websites where you can look up registrars by the number of names they have under registration. And then, so he started with the top tier. I think he started with the top 20 or the top 10, I can't remember, by number of registrations. And then as the conversation progressed, we said, be interesting to know whether there is a pattern by size. And so we went to Tier 3, which was the bottom of the list in terms of number of names, and I think we trimmed off the bottom of the list to eliminate essentially captive registrars that are really registrars that don't offer names to the public.
Okay, so tier is size.
Yes, by number of registrars.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, like under next to tier two, it says universal terms of service. But under tier one, the first column says domain registration agreement.
I think what he did is he looked for the document that addressed the issues for each registrar, and he put the name of that document in that slot. So I think it varies. I haven't got the spreadsheet in front of me, so I can't remember.
Oh, I see. So registrar number one has a registration agreement with its registrants.
Yeah.
Registrar number two has a registration agreement. So that's what they called it. I understand now.
Yeah. And some of them call them something else. And so wherever he found the bulk of the language, he would put that up as their primary document. And then if they had another document that addressed some of the other issues, he would put it in that secondary role. Because one of the things that we ran into was that the structure of these documents is different. Some of the registrars have everything in one document, some have it in several, and we didn't want to shortchange a registrar that was just covering it in more documents. So that's the reason for that, basically the two-row structure. So the first two rows, or first two chunks of the spreadsheet, are really primary document and secondary document, and you have to read them all together to see the coverage of the issues for that particular registrar. And the conclusion you can draw, oh, now, wait a minute, there's another chunk to this. If you look at the legend down below, that gives us a clue. The dark green was basically a thumbs up. The agreement met the category requirements. The lighter green meant that the issue was addressed but was in a separate agreement or a different agreement. The yellow meant he couldn't find it. And I can't. James, do you remember what the tier two or three document not found meant? I think that meant that they only had one document, or he only found one document for that particular registrar. But I can't quite remember.
I'm struggling with that as well, and this is probably one of those points where it'd be great to have that.
Yeah, we'll leave that one for Barry.
Barry on the call, but I think it was that either the secondary agreement was not found, or he couldn't find anything applicable for that category in any secondary or third level agreement.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. This is Greg. I have a couple of questions for the subgroup, if I may.
Go ahead.
Well, one thing that I would expect every registrar to have somehow or somewhere are the requirements that they're required to pass on to their registrants through their ICANN contracts and obligations. For example, and there aren't necessarily a lot of those, but one of them, for example, is every registrar is supposed to have its registrants held to the UDRP. It's a requirement.
Yeah, right.
Now, so in the first row, actually, of the spreadsheet, we see five registrars who have blanks. which means that Barry was not able to find a place where the registrar mentioned UDRP or binds its registrant to the UDRP, which is really surprising.
Well,
the registrar is required to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we found some of this surprising as well, and we had a pretty lively discussion about this, and we sent Barry back to the well a couple of times, and he came back saying, I can't find it. So, I mean, you're right, that we had several very similar conversations in the subgroup, and that was part of the reason we were pretty perky about the product that he's got here. This is the result of him being sent back several times, and he very willingly did it to look for exactly.
I'm amazed that there would be registrars who don't explicitly or implicitly bind registrants to the UDRP.
This is James. That's a good point, and my thinking there is that before we hand these folks over to compliance or something else like that, we need to make sure that it's not using some other type of language that from a legal context does exactly that, but maybe is not conspicuous within the registration agreement, so it may not refer to it as...
I agree, and that's why I use the word implicitly. Which, because
yeah,
a lot of registrars will have general language that does the job somehow. For example, some registrars say things like, I've seen contracts that say, you're bound to all ICANN obligations or something like that, which would take in a number of things. Or another registrar will say, you should not use your domain name for illegal purposes. And I guess there's some squishiness in there, but that would cover things like, don't use your domain name to perpetrate phishing or, other bad things. So on one hand, I understand why we don't want to have the registrar's names on here. On the other hand, I think we have a question of verification, because as you say, James, it might actually be covered, but we've missed it for one reason or another.
And this gets us back to one of the conversations we had in the subgroup, which was, what's the purpose of this research? Because this research, you can go very, very deep in lots of different directions. And what we sort of did is we limited our own scope and said, hang on, we're not really doing this to identify enforcement issues or anything like that. What we're really trying to do is answer the musical question, is there uniformity of contracts? And where we got was, we're pretty comfortable coming back to the group saying, no, there is not. If nothing else, for the very reason that you just described, Greg, which is that some contracts accomplish the mission one way and other contracts accomplish it a different way, and thus they're not uniform. And so we sort of stopped at that point and said, okay, that's good enough to take care of answering the question that we posed to ourselves. Now, falling out of this, there are a bunch of questions like the one you raised, which is, is it covered in language that Barry didn't see or pick up or whatever? But we got to the point of saying it doesn't really matter. In terms of the underlying question, which is there a uniformity of contracts? The answer is no, there's not.
Okay. So that's not a surprise, and that's not. I'm sorry. Go ahead, James.
I see that Barry has joined the call.
Oh, Barry's here.
Ah, Barry.
Yeah.
Great.
My apologies.
I'm limping along. It's so nice to have you on the call, Barry. We're going through your stuff, and I'm
Barry,
making stuff up like crazy.
Oh, my, Mikey. Barry, glad to have you. Mikey and James have been walking us through the spreadsheet.
Actually, your presentation about the spreadsheet.
Yeah, and basically explaining what it means. And where we are is they explained how to interpret the main spreadsheet with the columns for each registrar. And Mikey just said, basically, where the group has landed is, it's comfortable saying no. There's no uniformity in contracts, and that doesn't seem like a surprising statement. Speaking for myself. But Mikey, it sounds like you're also touching on the next question, which is, well, what does it mean?
Right.
So I think that's where we are, Barry.
And Barry, if you want, why don't you ride along for like one or two more slides, and then once you've kind of gotten into the flow of the conversation, I'll throw the ball to you so that you're not just sitting here.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. Personally, I believe, this is Barry, Mikey and James are more the brains of the operation. I was the muscle, so... I'll be glad to answer any questions that we have.
You know, this may go down as the subgroup that self-congratulates its fellow members the most.
I just want to put into the record, into the transcript, that is I'm vehemently opposed to that characterization.
Yeah,
no offense on Mikey.
I'm with James on that. Barry did the heavy lifting. Annie was the brains of the outfit. Anyway, so let's move on to the next slide, which is the sample selection slide, which gets you a little bit deeper into some of the questions that came up earlier. I'm going to sort of skip through this a little bit because we sort of talked about this earlier on. But again, we can certainly circle back to this and then get into the next page, which is agreement categories, which describes the mapping between contracts and our Well, no, actually, Barry, I'm going to let you... At this point, I'm going to hand the ball to you, because...
Okay, yeah, thank you. I got it. Okay, so in conducting the research or starting to wade through the various registrant contracts or agreements, what was consistent is that each agreement detailed or brought out formalized sections within every agreement. And so as an example... There was always or predominantly a section around a section around fees. And within those fees, they would outline how much, sometimes they would outline how much a particular registration cost, or sometimes there would be fees in there to recover an expired domain name, et cetera. It varied. But the point here is that there were always specific formalized sections within each contract. And so the idea was here was to basically conduct an inventory of each one of those sections. And after going through about 7 or 8 contracts, there was all of these different buckets started to flush themselves out. So everybody seemed to have a UDRP section. Everybody seemed to have agency. Everybody seemed to have breach or infancy, et cetera, et cetera. So there's two main sections. There's the RAP categories section, and then there's the other categories. The only reason I listed the other categories here is I wanted people to be aware that we basically inventoried every section of the contract. And then what you see in the end results within the PDF and the matrix, we only included those sections relative to our topic of discussion for registration abuse policies. So the RAP categories, typically they flushed out into these buckets. There was a UDRP. There was some sort of termination of service and or restriction of service slash takedown. There was a section in there typically about transfer dispute resolution policy, contact information, how to update your WHOIS and maintain it accurately, et cetera. There was a conduct and use section. This one, if you studied the chart well, very few registrars, it was a mix. Some registrars would have a conduct and use as a section in their contract. Other registrars chose to have a conduct and use separate agreement. And then the other three is spam, renewals, and expiration. So the idea here is that, again, we walked away with, I wanted to make sure that we kind of covered every section to make sure that we were trying to find any possible registration abuse type provisions to pull out of it. And that's the takeaway here. So that's how the buckets basically got defined. Any questions about the agreement categories?
Barry, this is Mikey. One of the questions that Greg raised just before you got on the call was the surprise he had over the notation that some registrars didn't have a UDRP green box in the summary chart. And I sort of limped through that, but if you could circle back around to that one question. I think Greg was really interested in it. My conclusion from that was that we didn't want to dive totally deep into that. We were mostly interested in whether there's uniformity. And so the fact that that might have been covered by slightly different language didn't bother us as much, but I think I was paving over something that you've got a better answer on.
Okay. I'll do my version of it. So in my findings across these 22 registrars, 72% of them seem to have UDRP sections formally defined in there. The other 28%, or which is really 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the 22 registrars, I cannot find a formalized section with UDRP. Now, that's so the caveat here is that these five registrars chose to not construct their contracts like the others in relative terms of UDRP, and that would not say that if they had a general introduction section or a general section that there might be one or two sentences in that agreement that spells out their UDRP, but I'm fairly confident that they didn't. So, again, you know, these five that didn't have UDRP, I specifically remember just having gone through them that they didn't have UDRP sections in there. And I thought that that was pretty interesting because, it is a formalized requirement that I believe registrars have to adhere to.
This is Greg. So in those five contracts, is the term UDRP mentioned at all?
Sometimes, not that I could find. Some of these contracts, like I haven't zoomed in. R21. I mean, R21 only meant they had a very. I'm going to use Barry's term here, but I would say a very disappointing version of an agreement that only satisfied two components. If you looked at the overall, like all the other categories, that one probably didn't even have five other formalized sections. And for whatever reason, they determined or kind of leaned towards their terms of use agreement, but that one in of itself didn't have very much as well. So again, for R21, I didn't find anything UDRP, and because I know it, because it was so small, I wonder why they even bother posting it up, because it seems like it didn't hit any kind of close to the baseline like any of the others did.
Okay. So in the case of R21, is this registrar's registrants bound to the UDRP?
They were originally my pool of registrars. first started by the web hosting.info list. That's where I pulled them, and then I cross-referenced that against the accredited registrars list from ICANN. And if they were on the accredited registrars list, they made it in this pool.
Okay, so my question is, if I'm a registrant of registrar R21, has this registrar bound me to the UDRP? Is there something in the agreements that I'm signing as a registrant that binds me to the UDRP? I don't care whether it's a formal section, you know, called out in the contract, but is UDRP covered or not?
By my inventory, I would say no. But if we want to go, so, you know, and this is what I tried to put into one of the other slides about what we put together so far, is I haven't gone line item by line item through every contract. So, again, we were inventorying the primary sections first to see if they satisfied, and then specifically as it related to RAP, working group abuse types down there, there I would perform keyword searches on the types of abuses that we had identified as a working group.
Okay.
So
the reason why I'm drilling into this a bit is because at some point the matrix will get published and folks will pull it up and look at it. And if there's a blank, we have to be very clear about the methodology and what the coding means, because it could be easily open to misinterpretation. Because if somebody looks at the column for R21, they'll say this registrar has not bound its registrants to UDRP. They're in violation of their ICANN contract, in other words. Now, if that's true, I mean, that, you know, that is a very interesting finding. But if the registrar has bound its registrants to the UDRP, we have to be able to explain why they have a blank and make people understand what the coding means, is all. This is partially a question, I think, about how the research material will be interpreted by folks out there. Because as we know, a lot of stuff that gets published through ICANN gets a rather cursory look, and people don't sometimes absorb it. And we have to be very clear in our terms. I don't want it to be misinterpreted and come in for any criticism that's not warranted. That's one of my concerns, because you guys worked hard on it.
This is Mikey. Let me dive in here for just a second. We covered this ground in the working group, in the subgroup, and that's part of the reason why this document was so slow in being published to the broader group, because now it's out on a Google available, publicly accessible list. And I think any help in refining this message to clarify that notion that I talked about before, that we stopped when we got to the point where we could support the conclusion, no, there is not uniformity of contracts, rather than getting to the actual contract review, the level of detail that you're describing. And so we were very concerned that this would be explosive. That's part of the reason we expunged the names of the registrars. But, you know, it's also the reason for this PowerPoint, this presentation, was to do that. And so as we go through this conversation, if folks spot ways that we can make this clearer and avoid that exact problem that Greg is describing, we're all ears, because we share that concern.
Well, one of the things, this is Greg again, one of the things you've pointed out is that this was taken to the point it was for a certain purpose. So stating that purpose up front will help folks out there understand what it's for. And the purpose was to understand if there was any
uniformity. And that's as far as it goes. Now, my next question, though, is now that we've answered the question, is there uniformity or not? The next question is, what does it mean? And how much further might we might have to take this? I mean, the charter of our group says, one, you know, we need to look at whether there's uniformity, but the question of what it means, it comes down to a few sentences, I think, in the charter, which is, we need to understand if registration abuses might be curtailed or better addressed if there was consistency. So that's the next question.
That's right. This is Mikey again. And I think that where the subgroup is at is we're in the middle of that process. We've gotten to the point where we can answer the question, is there uniformity or not? But we have not had the discussion, so what? We wanted to come back to the main group and give you a checkpoint on where we're at and what we've discovered so far. Because one outcome could have been, oh, there is uniformity. We're done. This is a non-issue. And we wanted to get to that sort of decision first. And I think that what we've got here in this presentation is the answer, no, there isn't uniformity, but we have more work to do when it comes to the so what part.
Excellent. Okay. I see Margie's hand raised.
Yeah, actually my comment related to the prior statements that it looked like some registrars may not have had the UDRP language in their contract. And it just wanted to provide a different perspective because a lot of registrars have those different models in the marketplace, and some registrars have written contracts. Some registrars might, through their software, require agreement to terms that may not necessarily be posted on their website. So in the ICANN contract, there's no requirement that the contracts be, you know, posted on websites. Registrars do it because it suits their business models. But I wanted to at least alert you all to the possibility that those registrars may actually be complying, but in a different way. It's just not visible to us through the text that's posted on the website. And from the perspective of the work we have to do in this group, it's not, you know, we're not really trying to, you know, set up compliance actions, for example. But, you know, really the intent of this group is to answer the question that, you know, that you've just posed, that, you know, is there uniformity of contract? If there isn't, you know, do we think it's a good idea? And so even if, it, you know, turns out that some, you know, registrars don't have that information up there, that doesn't necessarily affect our work because, you know, we just need to look at, you know, what we believe is the right answer, whether there should be uniformity of contracts and, you know, and what the contracts, what portions should be uniform.
Thank you, Margie. James's hand is up.
Yeah, just real quickly, and I think Margie covered that as well, and I wanted to just echo a lot of what Mike and Barry have been saying, and also, you know, address that the questions that you're raising, Greg, are very important and came up several times in the group, and I think that the others on the group will probably acknowledge that I was kind of a difficult person to work with because of them, but I think that
I'm not, you know, acknowledging that's my
okay, but my point is that one of the topics that we touched on was the idea that if we were going to go further with this particular exercise, that an ancillary step to that would be to possibly give registrars an opportunity to clarify what we were able to find publicly. Now, we decided that that was probably overkill for this purpose since we were just coming back to the main group and reporting what our findings were with respect to uniformity. But if we were to go any further and say, well, what does that mean, that we probably needed to, if it were, you know, give registrars an opportunity to fill in some of these blanks if it was indeed the case that they had these provisions in their contracts, and we just weren't able to find them. And another thought would be, you know, this group, and Barry in particular, certainly went above and beyond the exercises that a, let's say, a casual or typical retail-oriented registrant might do in, you know, collecting data and doing a comparison of different registration agreements. I would say most registrants are probably focused on price, among other things. But so if we assume that this group has taken a closer look at registration agreements than a competitive shopping registrar would, then we can say something to the effect of, rather than saying that, you know, for example, UDRP is not specifically mentioned, we can say it's not posted in a publicly conspicuous place where a casual registrant or might encounter it. And that might be one way to avoid some of the really indicting statements that I think you were touching on, Greg, which is, you know, registrar X does not contractually bind their registrants to the UDRP, or registrant Y has some significant vulnerabilities in their agreements. So, given, you know, if we were to establish for the benefit of the doubt that if there's a blank, you know, let's initially chalk that up to our inability to find something quickly or expediently, it may be covered somewhere else, and before we would move forward with any sort of detailed analysis, we would give registrars an opportunity to clear that up.
This is Mikey. I'm just going to piggyback on that. I think Margie's point is also germane here, which is maybe what we say is something like, this information is based on publicly posted on the website. Information that's publicly posted on the website and should not be construed to imply anything beyond that. You know, some sort of major foam on the runway to also point out the possibility that Margie brought up, which is it might pop up on your screen as you're, you know, as you're signing up for a domain. And again, sort of drag us back to the point of the exercise, which was not to exhaustively understand that, but just to come to the conclusion whether or not the publicly posted agreements are uniform. And the answer to that is we know.
I see Michael Young's hand up.
Hi, Greg. Thanks. I guess, you know, I'm listening to everybody here, and I know I've attended maybe about 40% of the calls, and I apologize for that. I previously had a conflicting meeting that is now been cleared, so it shouldn't be a problem in the future. But, you know, obviously from the discovery that's happened so far, and I think the points are very well taken, that the registrar, all we want to know about this may not simply be posted on a registrar's website, and they should have every opportunity to make us aware of what's happening in an accurate way. But, you know, I'm going to take a step back, and I guess I have kind of three questions here, and that is, you know, before we go much further, you know, shouldn't we concentrate on saying exactly what's the new exercise? Because even if it's an extension to me, to my mind, it's a new exercise. At the first exercise, gotten the answer. What's the new exercise? What's the next question that comes after that in my mind is, what's the argument for that exercise fulfilling the mandate of the working group? I think we should have a good answer for that and be prepared in every case when we're investigating or gathering information or asking questions in a formal way. And then lastly, you know, and not raising these questions to be obstructionist, but rather prepared. Because I think it's, you know, my own personal gut feeling is that this makes sense. But, you know, the last item here is, you know, is the right way to approach it to build a questionnaire with a number of questions that bring back information that fulfills that exercise and that mandate. The Pedner Group, as an example, has been building some questions for registrars around their areas of interest, and as well as registries. And I think that was a good exercise, and it's resulted in some, you know, a very thorough set of questions being developed for them that I think are phrased quite fairly and reasonably. But perhaps that's where we're heading here in this group with an exercise like that.
This is Mikey. I want to chime in at this point again. Part of what we're working on here is that this is a pre-PDP working group rather than a PDP working group itself, whereas PEDNAR is an actual PDP, I think. And I agree with all three of the questions that you're raising, and I would caution us not to go too deep in our work on actually doing work that probably ought to be done by a PDP group. That's the position that I've been taking pretty steadily through the subcommittee's work, which is, James and I do disagree on whether we need to go back to registrars on this, because from my standpoint, this is enough to say, yep, they're different, and that's enough for me. And it's enough for me to then go on to the so what question and frame some possible work for a PDP recommendation rather than actually doing the research here. I'm also on the PEDNAR group and know how much work that's been, and I'm not sure that we as a working group, a pre-working group, or a pre-PDP working group, need or want to go that deep. I can be persuaded, but this is sufficient for me to say, okay, that's enough. They're not uniform. Now let's get on to the question, what, if anything, are we going to recommend for a PDP on this topic? So that's just another point of view on this one.
And Mikey, I don't think we disagree quite that much. This is James. I think that I was saying that they should go back to registrars if we are going to present a recommendation based on this material. If we're just drawing a box around this and saying, now that we know about uniformity, we're not going to go forward with it, then I don't think we need to do that.
Yeah, and again, for the folks on the larger group, James and I have been going at it on this topic the whole time. And we'll figure it out. I don't feel terribly strongly about this, but the trouble with diving down into the actual registrar questionnaire level of detail is that if I were a registrar, we'd have to frame that questionnaire very carefully so that I didn't feel like I was essentially being called on the carpet for a compliance issue, and that's really not our intent here. We are not interested in pursuing the compliance issues, even though, as Greg pointed out earlier in the conversation, it's pretty easy to slide down that slope, and I think that's what James is trying to address. So I'm fine. I think the three questions you posed that triggered this reply from me are good ones, and I agree that that's what we ought to do.
Thank you, Mikey.
This is Barry.
I see Barry's hand raised.
I'd just like to add on to that when we first started the sub-team, that was the road I was marching down of creating a questionnaire. But as we started discussing it and how the questions would need to be framed, all the same issues that's going on in the PEDNR is first shaping all the questions so that it doesn't offend anybody or move them into a protectionist state. And then the second problem was, how much of a response are we going to get back from this when we could probably answer this stuff to some degree with just publicly available documents? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So if I can circle back, one of the
one of the questions before us that I've mentioned and Michael mentioned was, what does it mean? What's the next step, and how does that fit with the charter? So, and the charter says we need to understand if registration abuses are occurring that might be curtailed or better addressed if there was consistency.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, this is James, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to mention that we are kind of now getting into the latter slides of this particular presentation where we've captured, I think, a lot of those types of questions. So I just wanted to point that out, that those are reported back as well in Barry's work.
Okay. So let's take a look at those slides then.
Okay, yes. So we're done with the agreement categories. The next one is just go review the work and come up with your own conclusions. Next slide is the options slide. Basically, there's kind of four possible options from this point or paths for us to go down. The first is conclude that we need more research. Should we go into the details of every sentence of every agreement? Do we need to jump over and review the registrar agreements and other publicly available stuff, and or create an actual questionnaire that we engage specific registrars with and give them the opportunity to fill in the blanks? Option two, remain in the status quo and change nothing. I get the sense that we probably won't go down that path. Third is develop some abuse standards or best practices with voluntary adoption. It was flushed out of our discussion that this particular option has never really been done before. It was either a PDP or a change in the RAA that has been done in the past, so that might be new territory. Or then the fourth is just to recommend increased uniformity in contracts with respect to abuse, and something that both Mikey and James agreed on wholeheartedly is that, you know, there's some sort of minimum baseline or minimum standard in which to adhere to. So that's kind of it for our four options. Any questions about that for the next slide? Okay, I'll go ahead and just run through these pretty quickly. It'll take just two more minutes. So, you know, what are the questions to the larger group is, you know, what are the advantages and disadvantages of uniformity to all parties involved? You know, what does it mean to registrants? What does it mean to registrars? What does it mean to the abusers and the bad actors out there? You know, then we have questions around what does it mean from a jurisdiction perspective if we apply uniformity? What market conditions could be affected or changed out there if we went forward with more uniformity? What are the side effects and possible consequences? If uniformity is the desired state, you know, how will these changes be monitored and enforced? And then what impacts to liability and changes to indemnification can occur with ICANN upholding abuse provisions? And so the sub-team has some thoughts about these questions, but we felt we needed to, again, kind of check in with the larger work group and kind of reset our direction before we moved on with trying to really answer them. Last slide is just some of our general conclusions. We do believe that increased consistency would create a level playing field increase a more level playing field amongst registrars. That if the policies are consistent, then it puts the onus on ICANN to enforce it. The lowest common denominator or minimum standard approach with abuse provisions is best of breed out of our options. And lastly, just a better understanding of cost projections for implementation. And, you know, since this is a pre-PDP, you know, depending on how far we need to go down that road. So with that, that's basically what's next, and we're doing the what's next, and that's discussed with the larger team, and then determine next steps. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Barry. Well, we've got a set of questions. Should we go through from our sub-team? Should we go through those in order? gives some structure. So in that slide, the first question was, what are the advantages and disadvantages of uniformity? To registrars, abusers, registries, criminals, registrants.
Okay. And Greg, this is James.
Yes.
Hi. So I added, I asked to turn the mirror around. I asked Barry to add abusers, bad actors, and criminals onto this. I think that there may be an assumption that if all registrars were in lockstep with respect to their contracts, that would be a bad or an unwelcome development for criminals and abusers. And I'm not sure that that's entirely the case, and I think that that question deserves some further scrutiny. You know, one of the possible vulnerabilities, we use the analogy that a virus or a parasite always likes to, you know, see a uniform or lack of diversity in some sort of a agricultural setting, so that if you can attack one variety of corn or soybeans, you can attack them all. So I think that it's worth considering what uniformity would mean to the folks that are actually trying to undermine the security activities of registries and registrars, and make sure that we're not just assuming that uniformity is going to make their job harder or make them go away.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that?
This is Mikey. I think that one approach could be for you, the larger group, to send us the subgroup back to work, and we could probably develop a first cut set of answers to this. I think that one of the reasons we put these questions to you was not necessarily to try and answer them on this kind of a call, but rather to make sure that these are the right questions that you'd like us to take a crack at in the next iteration of what we're working on, rather than trying to... It's an awkward thing. Partly, you know, these are new questions for folks, and we'd love to have people think about them and contribute ideas, but also we haven't started really digging into these ourselves yet, and so just sort of a process note, you may want to just send us back to work on these a bit for you.
This is Greg. One of the things we could do is, I mean, these questions I think are very good ones. There might be some other ones, but I personally think these are pretty focused. These are good questions. They would need to be answered, I think, in our initial report. So one of my suggestions would be to put these questions up on the subgroup's wiki, where they could be fleshed out through whatever means we decide how to do that. If that's the subgroup starting to write up some material, that would be one option. But I think this is the point where we should start capturing all that information, all that in a written fashion, where everyone can see it and have an opportunity to add to it.
This is Mikey again. You know, I think that's a fine idea. Maybe the way to do this is to run these in parallel, or hand us the job of maintaining that wiki page, much the way George has been maintaining, you know, and others have been maintaining other wiki pages. But I think that the subgroup has been sort of purposefully holding off on having this discussion as we've learned about this. And we're likely to produce a lot of material
Yeah, I think it's time to start capturing that, because these are the core questions about whether uniformity is desirable or not, or why.
Yeah.
Which, and that needs to be in the report. I mean, we'll continue to discuss it in various ways, but we've got to start getting that down on paper so we can publish it at some point. I'm going to make that an action item to get this material into the wiki. The questions and the draft conclusions, which can then be further shaped, of course.
This is Mikey. I think that's work fine. I think our plan is to continue to meet. We've been sort of meeting in the off weeks. And at some point, people are going to start running into the sole meeting schedule, so we'll have to stop for a while. But I think we've all got a lot of ideas about this stuff.
Thank you. So any other... we've got an action item to take away to start fleshing that material out. Are there any other questions or comments on the uniformity of contracts topic for today?
This is Mikey. I'd like to drag us back one slide to the options slide and sort of polish off especially the first question, which is whether or not we need to go deeper at this stage. That influences what we do a lot. Whether we need to develop a questionnaire, whether we need, you know, or whether this is sufficient for this PDP, for this working group, sorry. And if we could get some guidance from the larger group on that, that would help us a lot.
I'm gonna raise my own hand. I see George, so why don't you go ahead, George?
I noticed actually there was a slide after the questions called UFC Subteam Conclusions, which actually started to answer some of the questions. Did we want to go over that slide? And there was also a what's next on that, beyond that. Those are the last two slides, page 10.
Yeah. I don't know how we skipped those. It's like magic. They just appeared. Anyways, Barry, do you want to do those last two slides?
I just went over them real briefly after we reviewed the questions to the larger groups. And so in terms of the USC subteam conclusions, the four bullets, there was a common discussion about how if there was more increased uniformity across contracts, it would enhance the playing field of consistency or consistency to the playing field amongst registrars. That was something that we had talked about. We talked about if the policies were consistent about in regards to registration abuses and how they were supposed to be applied in registrar or registrant contracts, that then puts the onus on to ICANN to actually begin to enforce more, the consistency. The third, agreement amongst the subteam is that if we did march down the road of trying to apply uniformity to these contracts, that the best way probably to go about it would be to create a minimum standard for everybody to adhere to, and that gives the flexibility or allows registrars to go above and beyond the minimum standard if they want. But we did feel that a minimum standard was probably best of breed for us out there and best for the marketplace. And then lastly, just a better understanding that if we did choose the uniformity aspect of this, you know, what is going to be the cost for implementation? And, you know, I don't know that that question would necessarily be, or that conclusion, I doubt that we would really get into true cost projections until we started answering some of the questions back to the to the larger group or into the marketplace in general. You know, is uniformity necessary? If it is, how much is it going to cost us to do that, et cetera?
Thank you, Barry. Any comments?
Yeah, George here. I think ultimately the devil's going to be in what the language is in the final conclusions. But my concern is that you don't want to necessarily turn the registrars into the cops of the Internet and, by extension, ICANN into the police of the Internet. One approach is to make sure that the who is accurate and people can file their civil claims in real court. But we'll have to, look further into what actual legal language is proposed as to these minimum standards, because people, for example, have widely different views of what spam is and who's responsible for it and every other type of abuse as well.
This is Mikey.
Just a second. I see James's hand raised.
Sorry, go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. This is James, and I wanted to point everyone's attention to the last question, which was essentially that, as George was saying, if we are going to, at ICANN's direction, convert registrars into the police of the Internet, then, of course, registrars are going to expect and require a pretty high degree of indemnification from ICANN if in the conduct of those that policing activity, it would turn into a or expose a registrar to any kind of civil action. We certainly don't want to hold ourselves out to a point where we're assuming all the liability, but ICANN gets the credit for cleaning up the bad guy. So.
Okay, Mikey.
Yeah, this is Mikey. I think the other thing is that there's a difference. I don't think that our charge will include writing specific language for contracts. I think that the furthest we'll get is once we take a deeper dive into this, coming back to you with a recommendation as to whether the consistency should be there. But the actual language formulation, I think, is probably way beyond our scope.
Yes, that would definitely that would go through a separate process at ICANN somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's back to the RAA process, and we certainly aren't planning to tackle that.
Okay. This is Greg. I've had my hand raised. The subteam conclusions are a draft, and of course they'd be something that the larger group would get into at some point. So I personally think there's no reason why we couldn't stick them on the wiki, but I imagine they're going to get a lot of more discussion as time goes on and editing. So no harm having them there for now as a basis for additional discussion. We need to move off this topic because we're coming up at the end of the meeting. So our action item is to stick all these questions up on the wiki. The subgroup needs to start fleshing out some answers to those questions, which the larger group will then tackle at some point. I mean, the main question is understanding if registration abuses might be better addressed if there was consistency. We don't have to take it to a huge degree of specificity because that would possibly be work that another group would do in the future. We're a pre-PDP group, but we do want to answer the question whether it's worth having some additional work be done. In other words, if we end up with a recommendation, we have to say why we feel that way. So let's take that as an action item. Jump at this point to the end of the agenda, which is scheduling the next meetings. We have another meeting scheduled for October 12th, which is 2 weeks from today. And then 2 weeks after that is the ICANN meeting in Seoul. And our staff members have been able to secure a spot, which this time is not at
at breakfast early in the morning, and it does not conflict with the ESAC meeting, which some folks always like to participate in. So the slot that is on there tentatively now is for that Wednesday, October 28th, 1400 local time. We'll send that around to the group, but that's a slot that is available. It's not on constituency day, and it doesn't conflict with many other things that might be of interest to for abuse issues. So we're hoping that works. We'll
George,
send that out.
I think yeah. Columbus Day is that day, October 12,
2009. Okay.
I think that's a federal holiday in the United States, according
it, to. Well, it's a federal holiday, but relatively few companies actually give their employees that day off.
This is Mikey. The 28th isn't Columbus Day.
The 12th.
But I thought you said the 28th was the date of the meeting.
The 28th is the ICANN meeting in Seoul, but the next meeting would be the 12th, 2 weeks from today.
Oh.
Now, I know I have to be at work because my company does not give us Columbus Day off. How about the other Americans?
Every day.
New York should not be the only place that's a real holiday, right?
Yeah, I've never heard of, I think even the kids go to school and the banks are open. So.
Yeah, the banks are definitely open that day. So I think we'll be okay, George, on that one. Thank you for your Canadian concern.
Well, those Italian origin often celebrated them. We have the issue today. So
anyway, we've got the 12th, the 28th at ICANN, and then we'd have November 9th, which is Monday. And then 2 weeks from then, the 23rd. The 23rd is the Monday before American Thanksgiving, which is on that Thursday. So that's a normal day in the United States, at least. If anybody looking forward, please post to the list if there are any major conflicts on November 9th and 23rd. I think we're already past Canadian Thanksgiving. Also, at some point, we will have a time change, and that's going to happen at different points, I think, in North America and Europe, for example, as we move to daylight savings. We'll have to look out for that as well. Anyway, we are at 90 minutes in, so it is time to wrap up.
Greg, this is James.
Yeah.
Real quick question. What are our intentions as far as publicizing that uniformity comparison spreadsheet at this point? Are we still working on it, or are we going to keep that close to the vest right now, or is that something that anybody can find at this point?
Well, Barry did post it up to the list, but it is certainly designated as a draft, and we're having a lot of discussion, and today's call, of course, is going to be publicly accessible as an MP3. I mean, I personally consider it's a draft.
Okay.
And if you look further down on that list, it's got some abuse types that we haven't even gotten to yet. You know, it's still in flux. I'm not worried about people seeing it. What's going to matter in the end, I think, is what gets is when this gets published as part of the initial report.
Okay. I just don't want it to have to be answerable to someone finding it and then putting it on a blog. And, you know, it's very much a work in progress.
Absolutely, and I'm sure it'll get a lot more work before it gets published with the initial report. If anybody does see anything where people are taking it, somebody out there is taking it as the gospel, then let us know. So anyway, I want to thank the guys on the subgroup. This was not only a lot of work, but it's also difficult to communicate. Everything that it means and everything that it doesn't mean. But, of course, we all know that those things are very important to communicate. So I really want to thank Barry and Mikey and James especially for walking us through that today, explaining what it means, and it's what does it mean and so on. So I appreciate it. I learned a lot more about it today. We will move on to doing some work on the wiki. We'll touch base on this next time, and maybe next time we'll move on to the spam phishing malware question again as well. So thanks for doing some work offline on the wikis and on the list. And we will reconvene in 2 weeks. So thank you, everyone.